welcome to episode 28 of Eye on Horror, otherwise known as season 2, episode 6, for those who like to divide it into seasons. I am your host, James J. Edwards, and with me yet again, as always and forever, Jacob Davidson. How you doing, Jacob?
I'm feeling sleepy.
You out late last night?
Yeah, I was at the American Genre Film Archive anniversary screening, and they did what they called a Reel One Party, where they played the first reel of five different, like, random movies. And it was wild. Like, Miami Connection came up, this shot-on-video horror movie, Boarding House, came up. Also, they did this crazy Hong Kong Poltergeist ripoff, which I forget what it was called, but like a marionette carried a child and dunked him down a well.
Let's come back to that, because I have a question for you about that. But first, he's sitting there gnawing at the bit here. Our other host, John Correa. How you doing, Correa?
Feeling ignored.
We started the show without you.
Feeling left out. I jumped the gun.
Feeling less than, just sitting here wanting to just say happy anniversary to Idle Hands, 2 decades of, you know, awesome.
Speaking of 2 decades of awesome, happy anniversary to the Blair Witch Project.
Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, as we are recording, I mean, you guys will hear this in another week, but as we are recording, it's the 20th anniversary of the Blair Witch Project as well. So, boom. The most influential movie of the 21st century. And it was just before the turn of the century.
You're still talking about Idle Hands, right? Because Idle Hands is very influential.
So back to the AGFA thing. Did they say anything about putting out a Blu-ray of Scary Movie?
No, they didn't.
So I did this column about this movie called Scary Movie a while back, and I saw it on YouTube because it's never been released. And I just got a message from the composer. His name's Hank Hemsoth, and I saw it on YouTube because he himself put it up on YouTube so people could see it. And he sent me a really cool Facebook message basically saying, hey, you know, we're putting this out. And it's the American Genre Film Archive. Is that the acronym? American Genre Film Archive. They are putting it out. And I guess they're doing screenings of it in Austin, I think, at the Alamo. Because Hank is based in Austin. And it's funny because it's not Scream. It's before Scream. And it's before Damon Wayans' Scary Movie. And but John Hawks is in it, of all things. But it's this super low budget. And it's really fun and really dirty. Anyway, that's when you brought up the American Genre Film Archive, that made me think of that. They're putting it out, and you know, this is like the coolest thing since Vinegar Syndrome released Disconnected. I mean, it's on that level of, you know, they're putting that out, you know, for me. So let's move on to there's something totally awesome that came out. Midsommar.
Oh, yeah.
You see Midsommar, Jacob?
I did see Midsommar.
Now, if you excuse me, I'm going to take off my headphones while you discuss this because I want to know absolutely nothing. Even if it's non-spoiler, I don't want to know anything. So just give me a thumbs up when you're done.
Well, also, wouldn't it be pronounced Midsommar?
Midsommar. Yeah. Midsommar, I guess, is how you say it.
It's all Nordic.
It is an absolute masterpiece. I freaking loved that movie. It's like, it's weird because it's almost 2.5 hours long, but there is not a wasted second of the damn movie. That, I mean, there's not a wasted frame in this movie. Ari Aster he's a genius. I mean, it's just brilliant filmmaking. My one gripe with it, and this isn't really a gripe, but I wish it was scarier. There's a couple real jaw-dropping scenes, kind of like there were in Hereditary, but Hereditary had this weird underlying sense of discomfort that I don't think Midsommar is. Am I saying that right? Midsommar.
I'd say Midsommar.
Yeah, Midsommar. It doesn't have the same kind of underlying sense of dread as Hereditary, but it is one of my favorite movies of the year. I mean, as a movie, it's flawless. What did you think?
I really liked it. I mean, you know, that's the thing. I saw it like a week ago, but I'm still processing. Like,
I actually had to go back twice. I've seen it twice.
Oh, wow.
I saw the press screening of it, and then I went back to see it. And the second time, you get more out of it, because when you know what's happening, you can see that certain characters know what's happening too,
right.
But you don't notice it the first time. So it's yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a very well made movie, and it was a very interesting subject. Because yeah, I can't think of too much Nordic horror, especially nowadays. Although that's big, it like with all of Ari Aster's works, it straddles the line between horror and melodrama. And
yeah.
In this case, it's about toxic relationships, and you know, just the setting. Does unsettle. Yeah, and it's also a very great daylight horror because most of it's set during the day, and it has that kind of dreamlike quality to it, you know?
They're so far north that the sun doesn't set. I mean, there's one point where she actually, they go to sleep, and then the girl wakes up and goes, is it tomorrow? You know, because the sun doesn't set on them because they're so far north. And that just, it makes it almost more unsettling that all this is happening in the broad daylight. And it's darkly funny too.
Oh yeah, no, they'd had a lot of great comedy moments.
It's funny. It's the kind of comedy that you feel weird laughing at.
Yep.
And it only becomes not funny when you realize that some people aren't laughing at it. You know, that the people, the characters aren't laughing at it. You're like, oh, okay, no, this is really weird. So, all right, let's bring Korea back in.
And I'm back.
And no. He's back. You know, that's the way whenever you guys would start talking about Midsommar Samar, before I saw it, I would take my headphones off because, and you guys hadn't seen it either, but I just didn't, because I didn't even watch a trailer. So I completely understand. And that's the right thing to do. Going in completely blind is wonderful. What else have you guys seen?
But wait. What? Real quick. I missed something. Is there a linguistic snobbery with Midsommar? Because I just heard James call it Midsommar.
Oh, you know, I've always been calling it Midsommar, but I have heard other people call it Midsommar, and I think that's how you say it.
Yeah, no, because it's not spelled summer. It's S O M M A R. It's like all Nordic and stuff. So it's Midsommar.
So I think there is a bit of.
I'm not looking forward to running into that snobby hipster at a party. Oh, you like horror movies? Did you see Midsommar?
And it's that snobby hipster to me just like maybe 2 minutes ago.
Oh, come on.
Well, hey, listen, I will gladly engage in conversation with most people, but like, you know, I could just tell that like that's going to lead to we're going to get off on the wrong foot real quick. That's what, aren't we? This is just the beginning, isn't it?
You know, just right. Just watch out if they call it elevated horror.
Like, you might as well have just chewed on some fucking tinfoil right then.
Let's start mispronouncing horror. every movie that we talk about from now on for the rest of this episode, okay?
Have you seen Chilled's Play?
I did see Chilled's Play. That's what I was about to say. I saw it after you guys did.
The only time that me and Jonathan beat you to the punch.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, if they don't screen it for press, I don't, that's why I haven't seen Crawl either.
Have you seen that movie, Adolescence Festivities, I believe it's called?
This is going to be a thing.
Since I'm the only one who hasn't given my take on it, I will real quick. I like Child's Play. I kind of wish they hadn't called it Child's Play. I wish that they had just started a whole new franchise, but then of course you're going to have the risk of it's a Child's Play ripoff, you know. But I thought that the whole AI thing, it's more than just a possessed doll, you know. It's creepier than that. So I really enjoyed it.
I'm more than okay with it being called Child's Play because it's
same,
and I do really like the fact that even though this film exists, that Tom Holland and all the guys behind the original series are still moving ahead with their series and all that. So I like that we can have so much of it. I mean, Child's Play isn't my favorite franchise, but I still really like it. But I like that we can have multiple. It's kind of like with Evil Dead, how you can have like the Ashley Williams ones and then you have the Fede Alvarez one. Like,
are they setting it up for a Chucky versus Chucky?
That would be fucking awesome.
Robo Chucky versus serial killer Chucky.
That would be pretty awesome.
Mark Hamill versus Brad Dourif.
Yeah, that would be great.
That's got to be a huge rights like thing.
Yeah.
The legalities behind that can't be fun.
Be like Jason versus Uber Jason, which happened in the comics.
That was a great comic series. Like, because the whole point of it, like, it, like, spoiler alert, with Jason versus Jason X, like, Jason X, I think it was, wins, and he, like, rips out Jason's brain and, like, puts it into his own brain. That was gnarly.
We're starting to ramble now, but it's okay because there's not really that much new stuff that came out. The only other thing I can think of is Crawl, which Korea and I have not seen. So, Jacob, tell us about Crawl.
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was a lot of fun and very scary. You know, it's a very simple premise. It's a house. It's a crawl space. It's flooding in the middle of a hurricane, and there are a shitload of alligators.
Right.
Like, seriously, the gators make the movie very, you know, just they're an overwhelming premise because, you know, they could be under the water at any second. And it was directed by Alexandre Aja, and he does a really great job of ramping up the tension because it's very subtle, but you can notice, like, gators moving in the background or in certain, like, shapes in the water. So it's like gators,
I love that shit,
everywhere.
Well, it's like what we were talking about with the car the other week, when you see the light reflecting off the glass of the car off in the distance. I love that type of tension.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like, I don't want to spoil, but it does a great job of kind of doing background, background scares.
I will say this. I haven't seen it yet. I'm actually seeing that in Midsummer double feature. That's what I'm doing the rest of my day.
Nice.
But you're seeing that and what?
And Midsummer. Midsummer. But I did read, you know how, like, on Rotten Tomatoes they take, like, one line from a review, and one of the negative reviews had said, like, something, and then, like, the final line was, it's just Jaws in a big dark house.
Saw that
someone retweeted it and was like, yeah,
sold.
Yeah, why wouldn't I want to see Jaws in a big dark house? And I was like, yeah, how is that a negative point? Like, that sounds fucking awesome.
No, that sounds awesome.
Gators
Jaws
in the house. But yeah, it's a great natural disaster when animals attack mashup type movie. But yeah, no, it's a solid film. I would definitely recommend it. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I got to interview Sam Raimi for it because he produced it.
Oh, nice.
Oh, I was so pissed that you got to go to that. Did you get to go to the alligator feeding too?
No, I had a shift that night, so I had to skip. Although it was a phone interview too, so.
Oh. Yeah, it was like a two-night thing where they had, like, it was for the press. It was like a dinner, drinks, there was an alligator feeding, and then you saw the movie and then got to interview Sam Raimi, and I missed out.
If it was a phone interview, how do you know it was really him? It wasn't just... How do you know they didn't send Mark Hamill to be Sam Raimi?
Oh, he's just dubbing in for everyone now, isn't he?
Anything else new that we want to talk about, or we want to move on to our subgenre?
Well, I will say this. My copy of Green Inferno came in.
Look.
And have you changed your mind on it?
Let's put it this way. My stack of have-not-watched Blu-rays is... It's going to keep me from watching Green Inferno for quite some time, but I might do a double feature of that in Cannibal Holocaust just for shits and giggles.
I went to the Rated R Speakeasy on Friday, which is hosted by Graham Skipper, who you've seen in Almost Human, and he directed Sequence Break. And this was my second time, and it's so much fun because, I mean, they've got screenings, they've got a bar, they've got food, they've got an arcade gallery you can play. So there's a lot to do, and it's sponsored by Fangoria. And yeah, they do whatever. It looks like it's going to be a monthly occurrence, although it's so popular they've made it two nights this month, so instead of one, so not sure if that'll be a recurring thing, but it's always good and just a great place to socialize and also play a shitload of House of the Dead.
Nice.
Were they showing House of the Dead while you were playing House of the Dead?
No, and thankfully, and I'm thankful for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, our dream is to play Rampage while we're watching Rampage.
Yeah, just got to get that cabinet. Here is Warner Brothers.
Wait, what?
We will do this stunt.
We promised we weren't going to bring up Rampage this season.
Wait, we did?
I think that was the only reason why we're breaking this up into season, so we can make... empty promises like that.
I must have been sick that day because I don't remember ever making such a promise. let's move on to our subgenre, which kind of, I don't know if you're going to want to take your headphones out again, because Jacob, take it away.
All right, well.
We already discussed it, so.
You know what's coming. But yeah, so since we're all gung-ho about Midsommar, we decided to talk about folk horror, which, you know, is a lot of horror that ties into cults, Midsommar, pagan beliefs, folklore, and, you know, just kind of weird little towns, that sort of thing. You know, a lot of running aesthetics.
Yeah, I just, to prepare for this conversation, I watched The Blood on Satan's Claw last night.
Ooh, I haven't watched that.
It's a weird little movie. It has the aesthetic of like a Hammer movie, but it is, I mean, the Satan's Claw that they speak of is hilarious. It's like this, almost like a werewolf arm. It's pretty awesome. And it's kind of like three stories based. In fact, I heard that it actually was supposed to be an anthology movie, but then they just kind of tied the three stories together, because there's one about basically a judge fighting Satan, and then there's one about a guy whose fiance gets possessed, and another one about a bunch of school kids that get possessed. And they kind of just threaded them all together and added character, you know, running characters through them, and made a pretty wacky movie. It's pretty crazy. And I read somewhere that that it was one of the influences for Midsommar, and there is one scene in particular where you're like, okay, I can see Ari Aster saw this before he made Midsommar.
Yeah. As for me, I was thinking about this a lot, and one that I think ties together while hitting some other subgenres is Stuart Gordon's Dagon, which I always thought was interesting because, you know, he had to move the setting from rural New England to rural Spain, mostly due to budgetary reasons, but he kind of made it his own, because instead of Innsmouth, it's Imboca, which is Spanish for in the mouth. And I feel like it did a good job of really amping up the folk factor, because, you know, it's small coastal town, fishing community, a lot of people stick to their own, and of course the pagan rituals to the sea monster Dagon come up. I feel like that kind of captured that spirit, while at the same time keeping the Lovecraftian themes.
Now, I will take any opportunity to bring up Ken Russell, so I definitely want to mention The Lair of the White Worm.
Oh, yes.
It's one of those movies that I was really sad I didn't watch sooner. Like, I only watched it once the Vestron Blu-ray, which is one of their best products they put out so far on that Vestron video series. But, oh my God, is that a fun film. Like, just seeing like that old, like Ken Russell when he was going through his Victorian horror phase is really interesting, between that and Gothic. Like, Lair of the White Worm just has some of the great, like, best, like, dream sequences and, like, just trippiness and all around just, like, real creep factor with a lot of, like, the vampiric lore of it. Fun movie.
A lot of nuns, too, which seems to be a recurring theme of Ken Russell.
Yeah.
Am I going to be the one to bring up The Wicker Man then? We talk about folk horror.
when you talk about folk horror, Wicker Man is like,
that's the default state.
Synonymous.
That's the given.
It's such easy. It's the ultimate. It's definitely the ultimate, but it's also just the lowest hanging fruit when it's like, we were trying to all be cool and like coy and like trying to beat around the bush around it, just being like, oh yeah, no, I'm going to mention something else and seem like I know a whole lot more about the subgenre.
and here I had to go throw the freaking softball, the Ephus pitch that
just Kool-Aid man it with Wicker Man. Let's do this. I fucking love Wicker Man.
Now, the Wicker Man probably is the closest comparison to Midsommar, but that's not to say that it's, I mean, it only in broad strokes, but yeah. There's
I'm sorry, I'm going to keep laughing every time we say Midsommar now. Like,
it's hard for me to get used to it because I've been calling it Midsummer since I saw it. But it's totally right. That is how it's pronounced.
But it's Midsommar.
Yeah.
You got to add the Midsommar.
When I think of Wicker Man, though, all I get, the image I get is Christopher Lee doing that dance, you know, with his arms back and forth. And everybody's doing it with him, but he just looks so awesome what he's doing. Mm-hmm.
But that's the beauty of that film, is like there's so many moments like that sequence where they are dancing and Christopher Lee is dressed in drag. And you're just taking that moment where it's like, here's one of the most badass and terrifying men ever, you know, legendary, dressed up in drag, doing this really silly dance. And yet it is also one of the most terrifying things ever, because it is such like a light moment, the beginning of that, that you just, but it has this like feeling of dread, like, you know, something terrible is coming. Like, there's no way that they're doing all this just for fun. Like, they're setting up for something terrible.
And they're so happy about it too. That's exactly the thing. You're like, okay, wait a minute. These people are way too happy about what is about to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. And if I may interject, I actually have a story about how I first saw The Wicker Man. Because a couple years back, remember Ben Whatley did that movie Free Fire?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I was at a screening, or a screening of what was supposed to be screening of Free Fire at the former Cine Family with Ben Whatley there. But I don't know, there was a mix up and they lost the DCP or something. So instead, they played Ben Whatley's personal collected print of The Wicker Man on 35mm. And that was actually the first time how I saw it. And the biggest thing that I took away from it, too, is that it's also kind of a musical.
Oh, yeah. Very much so. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's an amazing soundtrack. I'm surprised no one has put that out on vinyl.
And they actually break into song.
Exactly.
Like,
it's a musical.
I mean, it's not just diegetic songs. It's like all of a sudden, you know, there's a girl grinding around naked in her bedroom singing.
And you got these minstrels in the mask marching around. Like, the parade. The parade is one of the parts I remember the most, aside from the obvious. It's because, you know, you got all these pagans all dressed up with, like, trumpets or horns and stuff. And while the dread is building, you know, they've got this jovial music and dance.
And also that naked singing bit, like, just that music alone is just like this weirdly hypnotic. It was like a siren singing out to the police officer.
Yeah. Through his wall. Yeah.
And it's not just because she was like naked grinding against the wall. Like, the song itself, like, I'll be listening to the soundtrack in my car because, you know, L.A. traffic.
Yeah.
And
what better time to listen to The Wicker Man?
I mean, if I listen to Fury Road, it just unleashes hell. that and the
Lovely
Speed
day.
Racer theme don't lead to good things when I'm driving.
And while we're talking The Wicker Man, should we bring up the Wicker Man remake with Nicolas Cage?
The only good thing about that is that, like, 5 to 8 minute compilation video where all it is Nick Cage punching women in the face and then him screaming about bees.
And how to get burned. How to get burned.
How to get burned. How to get burned.
What other good folk horror movies are there? What about, talking about another, you mentioned Christopher Lee is one of the most frightening men. Moving on to another one of the most frightening men, Vincent Price, Witchfinder General.
Oh, yes. I love that movie.
Still have not seen it.
Oh, my gosh. Witchfinder General. Vincent Price has actually said that he thinks that is his most sadistic character. And I would have to agree. I mean, there's nothing campy about the lead role in Witchfinder General.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't know, it's a period horror movie where Vincent Price plays a witch finder general, like a dude who's supposed to go out and find and persecute witches, named Judge Hopkins, right?
I believe, Matthew Hopkins.
Yeah, Judge Matthew Hopkins, which was based off of an actual witch finder general. And basically, he's a sadistic, sociopathic con artist who would, like, exploit people for their money and, like, force himself on women. And he would just kill people for fun and profit.
Well, I think he realized that none of these people really were witches, but he would still exploit his position to, you know, for his own gain. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
he's a bastard.
Oh, yeah. He's a total asshole. And it's definitely in the realm of folk horror because, you know, which is funny, too, because, like, a lot of these folk horror movies are usually, like, the pagans or the worshipers, the cultists are the bad guys there. In this case, it's a fanatical and exploitative member of the Christian government.
It's the Christians that are the bad guys in this one.
Yeah. And, it's played for intensity. It's not really... There isn't really much much comedy to it, or, you know, like, you know, it's kind of fun horror. Like, it's just very intense.
There's no mustache twisting in this one.
Although he does have a magnificent beard.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's got, like, one of those wispy mustaches.
Yeah. There's no figurative mustache twisting in this.
Yeah.
No snidely whiplash.
Yeah.
What else we got folk horror-wise before we move on?
I want to bring up Gareth Evans' Apostle that hit Netflix.
Oh, yeah,
last year.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because I feel like, you know, a lot of times when we talk folk horror, we're not talking a lot about the contemporary, because the last year and this year, we've gotten, the last couple of years, we've gotten a few really good folk horrors, and I thought Apostle was really solid. Man, like, you could definitely see a lot of the Wicker Man influence and a lot of others, and what a brutal, brutal, like, third act.
Oh, yeah.
That was.
It goes full-on gore. Loved it. And Dan Stevens was really good in that, too.
What isn't Dan Stevens good in? Like,
Dan Stevens, yeah, he just anything, even when he's the Beast.
Yeah.
And even when he's evil Captain America, you know, and the Guest, like... huge man crush on Dan Stevens.
And back on Ben Whatley, wanted to bring up Kill List. Have you guys seen that one?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, I thought that was pretty cool, you know, because it's kind of a mashup movie, too, because it's about a hitman who's hired to, you know, take out people on the kill list, but then it just twists further and further, and it, like, involves this weird cult. And those straw and stick masks that the cultists wear still kind of freak me out. Like, they were really creepy, and just there's a lot of weird ambiguity to it, and like some of the twists and turns just like really fuck you up.
We can't leave the topic of folk horror without talking about the witch, or the vavavitch.
Yes.
The
witch. Because that is it even says a New England folktale. That is one of the modern examples that Cree was talking about. I know people are divided on the witch. A lot of people found it very boring and just slow. I loved it. A friend of mine watched it with the subtitles, and he enjoyed it a lot more. I think the language, the period language, kind of killed it for some people. But when you can read what they're saying, I guess it's a lot easier to follow. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And on the topic of witches, and having discussed the anniversary earlier, would you say the Blair Witch Project counts as folk horror?
That's more urban legend, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a tough one. But, I mean, there's some overlap between urban legend and folk horror. Yeah. I just don't know that you get enough answers in the Blair Witch Project for it to be folk horror.
Yeah. Oh, it's funny. I was actually rewatching the DVD, which has that... mockumentary they did to promote
Curse of the Blair Witch.
Curse of the Blair Witch, yeah. And I feel like that kind of falls in the realm of folk horror, because it talks about all the folk legends about the Blair Witch, like the massacre at Coffin Rock and Rustin Parr. So, I mean, there's definitely...
Ellie Kedward.
Oh, yes. Ellie Kedward. Which is the thing, you know, is that there's at least a folk horror root at the story.
There's a genius mythology surrounding the Blair Witch. I know we talked about this before, so we don't need to go into it, but I mean, that's the only reason that movie, to me, is scary. Is, I mean, if you just watch the movie itself, it's you know, it's typical found footage, but if you know the mythology, and you also have to pay attention to the interviews at the beginning.
Yeah.
To really understand.
Because they talk about the legends.
Yeah, well, and also to really understand the very ending. You know, if you weren't paying attention to those interviews, you're like, what the hell did I just watch? But if you know, you know, what's going on, you're...
Yeah.
Why are you standing in that corner?
I know.
But a lot of people are just like, yeah, seriously, why the fuck is he standing in the corner?
Is he taking a piss? What the hell?
Taking a piss?
That's a lot of people's reactions, but...
Let's move on to our topic, which this is kind of... we're going to kind of do a six-month update of the year, because of all of the... movies that have come out. I know that there have been a number that we have all loved, and we're going to, you know, this is all stuff you've heard us talk about before, but we're putting it all in one place for you. And now that a little bit of time has passed for some of these, maybe we have a little more to say about them. So we're going to talk about our favorite movies from the first half of 2019. And I'm going to say, first off, my two favorite movies so far of 2019 are Midsommar, which we've talked about
Midsommar
quite a bit today, so we don't need to go into it anymore, and Us. And
yeah,
I will say, going back, I mean, Ari Aster and Jordan Peele. It's both of their second movies, but these two movies have pretty much solidified the fact that I'm going to see everything that either of those guys makes for the rest of their career, just because I'm sold on both of them. I've loved both movies from both of these filmmakers. So I think they're both, I mean, in different ways too, because I think Jordan Peele has more to say on a social level, but Ari Aster is just a master of the filmic language. I mean, he is just, I mean, he just understands how to use film to manipulate the audience. And Jordan Peele does too, but in a different way. It's more in the writing with Peele, whereas Aster, it's in the visual style. And, you know, and there now, that's my film school in a box for you guys. What have been your favorite movies of the first half of the year?
Well, I mean, shit, now we have nothing to talk about because we talked about them all. No.
No, there's more. I got others.
I have to say, Child's Play, I know a lot of people really didn't like it because I'm going to say for fanboy reasons. But all around, I thought as like a horror film, I thought it was a lot of fun, you know, and too often we either like, you know, we're trying to find the artistic merits of something, but Child's Play didn't care. It just wanted, it was just a fun movie. Like, and especially since I'm engaged to someone who's like really into like data privacy and what's happening with like that type of technology and all that, like it added another layer of like, oh yeah, no, like, don't get me wrong, the whole like premise of like it just being one person messing with one toy and all that, but the interconnectivity of everything and like a company having that type of control, it's a very realistic and very real type of horror, you know. So
my favorite thing about the Child's Play remake, and this isn't a spoiler because it happens in the first scene, but the whole movie basically boils down to that episode of The Simpsons, because basically this particular Chucky doll, the switch is set from good to evil.
Here's your problem, Pally. Somebody set this thing to evil.
That's the whole thing, and it happens in the first scene, so I'm not spoiling anything. Yeah. But literally, a technician set it from good to evil, and then put it on the pallet.
But there was also like a lot of genuinely like really weird and creepy moments, like when Chucky's sitting on the bed and he's just like, Andy, and like Andy shuts the door. Like, I know they were trying to come off with like the doll and being sympathetic, but that was just creepy. It's like that thing shouldn't be like acting like that.
Yeah. I was totally sympathetic towards Andy because I realized it wasn't his, I mean, toward Chucky, because I realized that it wasn't his fault. He was set to evil, but I mean, I felt bad for that. And I think a lot of that is the voice acting of Mark Hamill. He is really good at evoking that kind of sympathy. I mean, he makes you know, I feel this way about a lot of Spider-Man villains as well, though, too, because I think they're all misunderstood. But anyway, Chucky in the remake, he wasn't born that way. Someone made him evil.
As for me, you know, it's so tough to choose because there's so, you know, there are simultaneously a lot of options, but I don't know. But yeah, I'd have to say one of my favorites would have to be Jim Jarmusch's The Dead Don't Die, because I feel like we don't have a lot of horror comedies out right now, especially lately, and especially in mainstream theaters. So, you know, it was a welcome change of pace, and I mean, it's a pretty straight-up zombie movie, but it just has such an amazing cast, and it has so many funny gags. Like, I laughed my head off seeing it in theaters, and yeah, like, you know, just I was actually at a screening with Jim Jarmusch in person, and he was pretty upfront about it. He basically wanted to make a movie with all his friends, so it kind of had that fun quality to it, because it's just this dude wanted to go out and make a fun movie with his friends. He made a fun movie with his friends,
and he just happens to have A-list actor friends.
Yeah.
Because the cast is incredible.
Oh, extremely so. Yeah, and like Adam Driver and Bill Murray were a pretty funny duo. They worked well off each other. And Tilda Swinton as a Scottish samurai loving mortician was comedy gold. So I was pretty stoked about that. And you got Tom Waits as like a like a homeless survivalist with a crossbow.
Yeah, he's like a backwoodsman kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Iggy Pop as a zombie with a coffee fix.
Oh, yes. Iggy Pop as the coffee zombie. Yeah.
Coffee. Oh, and Carol Kane as a zombie who just wants her Chardonnay.
Yes. Yes. No, and yeah, there's just, and the RZA is in it as a part, as like a delivery man for like Wu-Tang Delivery or something. So yeah, there's just so many great gags like that, and without spoiling it, it does have some pretty funny meta moments. So like like I said, there just is a very distinct lack of horror comedies lately, but like that one really cracked me up.
I had with my experience with The Dead Don't Die is while I'm watching it, I loved where it was going, but I hated where it ended up.
Yeah. So,
and if you see the movie, you probably know exactly what I mean, you know, where it lost me. But anyway, it is what it is, which is basically it's Jarmusch's love letter to Romero is the way that I felt it was.
Yeah, he talked about that at the screening too, like he did want to honor Romero, so he did a kind of zombie movie in that style. And it's also kind of interesting too, because it did have some underlying environmental and social messages, you know, because they don't give an outright explanation, but like it may, the zombie apocalypse may have been caused by polar fracking. Like that, like, because there's these radio announcements in the background, like, we're fracking the North Pole and the South Pole, and it's kind of messing stuff up.
I'm going to say one that I don't think, I have a couple other favorites I think one of you guys are going to say, so I'm going to go to one that I don't think either of you guys are going to say. The Pet Sematary remake.
Oh,
I was going to say that.
Actually, like, well, fuck. Then I beat you to it. Yeah. I know that it got a lot of hate from people who are comparing it to the original. It's like, you know what? The existence of this Pet Sematary is not taking away the existence of the other. If you like the other one better, great. Go watch it. There's room for both of them. I love both of them. I think I like this one more, including that batshit ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, totally awesome. I mean, I was a little disappointed that everything... There's one major, major change in the movie, and it was spoiled for me because I accidentally saw a trailer and a website that is not ihorror.com and it's not Bloody Disgusting, so you can guess which it is, totally spoiled the big change. And I actually stopped following them on Facebook because of it, because they also did the same thing to Midsommar. They were posting pictures and I'm like, oh, I don't want to see this. So yeah, anyway, but also, even the movie poster, the final movie poster, spoils the big change. I'm like, dude, just let people be shocked for themselves when that happens. Anyway, I really enjoyed the Pet Sematary remake. And, you know, hey, you know, address your hate mail to Cinema Firite on Facebook.
I mean, come on, John Lithgow. John Lithgow. Yeah.
You know, the best thing about Lithgow is he didn't try to do Fred Gwynn.
Yeah.
No.
You're Judd Crandall. Hey, there's room for two.
And that was the thing, is that like they weren't, and I understand with like the big changes, because they did do a few big changes to it. But like even taking that away, you could definitely tell that they were still doing justice to the original book, but they were also paying respects to the original movie, but they were at the end of the day making their own. And that's, if you're adapting anything, whether it's remaking a movie or adapting a book, that's what your number one priority should be, is delivering a good product and making it your own. Trying to rehash before, like if John Lithgow was dropping his R's and saying something should be better off dead, you know, that it wouldn't have fucking worked. And Lithgow absolutely killed it in Pet Sematary. Like,
because Fred Gwynn was like a cartoon and that was awesome, but no one wants to see that again. So Lithgow played it straight and it was also awesome.
But even his cartoon version of it was still like, because I know those people. I grew up in those areas of New England. So I know that guy. Like, I lived next to him, you know? And so that wasn't a cartoon to me. That was just like, oh shit, yeah, that's believable. There's, you know, there's a reality to that. But Lithgow, and that was a lot of like what I took away from Pet Sematary. Not only the massively creepy moments, especially between the daughter and the father, But also just like how much of it like was a real impact and a real story of loss and trying to get back and dealing with grieving and like, and at the heart of a lot of like King stories is that's what it is. It's always about like dealing with something that's really real. And that if when you tap into that more so than the campiness of a lot of his stories, that's when the real scariness comes out.
Cool. What's your next favorite Korea?
I had going around
in circle here.
You know, I just had there's a lot of horror movies that came out that for me were just a lot of fun, and I'm gonna say Brightburn was one of them too.
That was one that I knew one of you guys was gonna say, so I skipped it. I loved Brightburn.
Yeah,
it was. It wasn't trying to be Midsommar. It wasn't trying to be Citizen Kane. It was just like, hey, what if Superman was evil? And you guys know me. I fucking love scary kid movies. Like, where is this child scary? And I thought it was a fun addition to it. Is it The Omen? No. But is it up there with The Good Son? Yeah, dude. It was, and I am so looking forward to, I really do hope that turns into a franchise. Like, I think I'd rather see Brightburn 2 and then spin. I want that one to be the next Conjuring verse where it's just like all these different spin-offs. I want to see evil Aquaman. I want to see evil Wonder Woman. Fuck, do I want to see evil Wonder Woman? That'd be great.
An evil Justice League.
The Unjustice League.
But no, I'm with you. Like, I was a big fan of Brightburn, and I thought it did some pretty interesting things on the premise, because evil Superman stories have basically been done to death in the comics, but this was interesting because it didn't just ask, like, what if Superman was evil, but what if Superman was Michael Myers? Because it was a genre blend. It was a superhero movie, but also a slasher movie. Except, you know, like, this is a slasher with superhuman powers, and they made some very and like some of the kill scenes were some of the best I think I've seen so far this year. Like the audience like audibly cringed and jumped during like some of the scenes with like
the eyeball,
the glass. Oh my god.
The truck one
was more
disturbing to me.
That was traumatic.
And what I liked was a lot of the movie they did the fan service of showing moments like, you know, what everyone always thought, like, oh, what if Superman used his heat ray eyes on someone's head? Like, what would that really look like in real life? Like, they did that. And they did a lot of those moments. But at its core, like, just seeing the struggle, like, that kid was a great actor.
Oh,
and seeing his struggle at moments of, like, you know, wanting to give in to this twisted darkness, but then also, like, being like, I'm kind of doing fucked up shit. But then ultimately just being like, you know what, fuck it, I'm giving into it. Like, it was great.
What's your next favorite, Jacob?
Well, I talked about it earlier, but I really feel like it's one of my favorites so far this year. Crawl, like it genuinely was an amazing natural disaster thriller crossed with an animal attack movie.
I cannot wait to see it in an hour and a half. I should be in a theater seeing it.
Yes, no, it's a good time. and just like gators are scary. Like, you know, and I feel like the internet reminds us of this daily, because you see like these videos or clips of like alligators patrolling or spotted on golf courses in Florida, and they're basically dinosaurs.
Isn't there one in a lake in Chicago right now?
I kind of remember hearing something about a gator in a Chicago lake. But yeah, no, it's a very solid movie, you know, very simple premise that is genuinely frightening. Like, what if you're stuck in a house that's flooding but also filled with voracious alligators? Like, you know, it's just doesn't get worse case scenario than that. And the natural disaster elements really add to it too, because, you know, the storm is building outside and you are watching it build, and it's just like a double whammy of destructive nature. And it kind of reminded me of some of those disaster movies from like the 70s where they'd kind of have different stuff collide. Like, I was at the Jaws screen of The Egyptian. They did a pre-trailer for this movie called Cyclone with Hugo Stiglitz, which was apparently based on a true story about a plane crash and the survivors were stuck in a plane that was surrounded by sharks. So, you know, I'm a big fan of when, you know, kind of natural disasters collide with, like, Mother Nature gone amok. And, you know, it does a really solid job of keeping you on your toes. So, yeah, I would say it would be a favorite for me so far this year.
Have you seen Open Water 3?
No, I haven't seen the third Open Water.
Here's the premise for it. They're doing like a cage dive with a shark, and then a rogue tsunami capsizes the boat, so they're stuck in the water with the sharks.
Oh, there shit.
Maybe that'll pique your interest to see it.
That does sound pretty neat.
What are some movies from the first half of this year that you loved that maybe other people haven't quite embraced? I mean, I'll give you an example of mine. One of my favorite movies of the year is Greta. That to me was it was just Isabelle Huppert having a blast, having so much fun as this creepy stalker. And we've gotten three respected actors as creepy stalker movies, because we also had The Intruder and Ma. But to me, Isabelle Huppert did it right, and I love Greta, and I wish that I wish people would see Greta, honestly. If you haven't seen Greta, see Greta, because it's incredible. What about you, Korea?
Let's let Jacob go first, because okay. my choice is not good.
Okay.
Oh, no.
All right. Well, I was thinking more in the realm of, you know, there isn't really so much direct to video these days, but like a lot of stuff to streaming, I feel, is very underrated. Like there were two streaming titles that I was a big fan of that I feel need more attention with Dan Gilroy's Velvet Buzzsaw on Netflix, and one of the Into the Dark Blumhouse Hulu movies, All That We Destroyed. Like I really enjoyed both of them. Let's see, and of course Velvet Buzzsaw was the follow-up to, well, not really follow-up, but it was Dan Gilroy's movie after Nightcrawler, and
He made Roman J. Israel Esquire.
Oh, right, right. Oh, okay, I forgot about that.
I think most other people forgot too.
Oh, whoops.
Because Nightcrawler's a masterpiece.
Yeah, but, and I feel like Velvet Buzzsaw is very underrated, because it has kind of that Tales from the Crypt vibe to it, and he's very good, and Gilroy is very good at kind of adding satire to his movies. Like in this case, he's satirizing the pretentious art world, and Jake Gyllenhaal plays an extremely pretentious art critic. And, you know, it just has some great setups, because we've got killer art, which, you know, just goes beyond, you know, just like paintings and stuff. Like one of my favorite bits is like there's that sensal ball, which is like a giant sentinel sphere from Phantasm, and Toni Collette puts her hand in it, and well, you remember what happens. Chelsea Stardust's All That We Destroy is probably my favorite Into the Dark movie from that series so far, which was released for Mother's Day, and I felt had a pretty interesting premise, because it's about this mother who's a geneticist, and her son kills a woman, and he seems to really like killing, so he's a budding serial killer. So she decides to try and help him get over it, or to, you know, like pacify his murderous impulses by killing the same person he killed over and over again to try and get it out of the system. And it has kind of a Black Mirror vibe to it, but it is kind of like a modern, you know, kind of Frankenstein type science gone wrong tale.
I thought when you were talking about direct to streaming, I thought you were going to go for The Perfection, which
I had
actually forgotten about, but it would be on my list because I loved it. And it's kind of best if we don't talk too much about it, because The Perfection is better if you just kind of go in.
Yep,
blind.
A lot of twists and turns. Like like my jaw dropped so many times watching that movie.
Yeah, and because it does the funny games thing where it'll like rewind, it's like, yeah, and then show you the same thing but from a different point of view, and you're like, oh.
And it should be worth noting, like, it definitely has a deep Korean horror influence.
You got one for us yet, Korea?
Yeah.
Oh, you don't sound too enthusiastic.
Is he
going to
bring us down?
This is purely based off of James saying films that other people might not know of or given a second thought. And I had fun with Hellboy.
Ooh.
Oh.
Like,
ooh.
And it's one of those movies where, like, while I'm watching, I'm like, this is fucking stupid. This is dumb. Why is this happening? Why does this thing exist? But, like, afterwards, like, I think about it and I'm like, that was fun. You know, I kind of want to see it again. Like, I wanted to see it again. Like, granted, I have AMC Pass, so, like, I, you know, it's not costing me money to go see it again. It's just costing time and my limited lifespan. But, yeah, it's not a good movie. It's not. And is it unnecessary? Yeah. But you know what? Like, I'm a big fan of Hellboy, and I don't know why, but, like, I just really want to watch it again. I'm not saying that people should rewatch it or people should see it because it's a great movie. Fuck, I don't even think most people will find it fun. And I'm not trying to be snobby and saying, oh, most people just won't get what they were going for. Just, like, it's a dumb movie, but it's a fun, dumb movie. So, like, you know, maybe if you're, like, hungover on a Sunday morning and it comes on HBO, or you're just, like, looking for something, you know, to just kind of, like, have on, you know, it's not a bad film, and it's for that. And yeah, I'm not, again, not putting it up with my top five. Fuck, it's not even gonna probably be in my top 10 this year. But I went, if once the
it was
Blu-ray
no Rampage
gets, yeah, well, that was last year. That was last year's. But yeah, it, when that Blu-ray hits like a low price, yeah, I'll pick it up. Why not?
All right. Well, any others that you guys want to mention before we head out?
Well, I mean, you know, it's not necessarily horror, but I feel like it's within that realm. Godzilla, King of the Monsters. That was,
oh, yeah.
That was definitely a favorite of mine this year, just because pure Godzilla movie. Michael Dougherty really knew what a Godzilla movie could be and should be, especially with that budget. And yeah. I mean, King Ghidorah was legit scary, because I mean, yeah, it's this like giant dragon Satan, and like it was just a treat for me to see a big monster battle happen in my hometown of Boston. Like, it was a dream come true.
What are some horror films that, even though they just came out like a couple of months ago, what did we already forget about? Like, just they were forgettable. You know,
Glass.
Yeah,
Glass.
I mean, I love James McAvoy in it, but as a movie, Glass is.
Anyone remember The Prodigy?
I didn't see it, so that's how poorly I remember. Oh,
I mean,
Curse of La Llorona. That's one that kind of. I mean, it kind of got lost in Annabelle Comes Home, but yeah.
And this isn't saying that these are particularly bad films. I mean, I haven't seen Prodigy either. I heard good fun things about it, but like, just totally forgot that came out this year. What about Happy Death Day to You?
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't mind Happy Death Day to You, but you're right, I forgot about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was fun, but disposable.
Yeah, it kind of feels the same way.
What about, real quick before we take off, what is, let's just do one each, a non-horror movie that you have loved this year?
Oh.
Have I seen non-horror movies?
I just want to take this opportunity to give a shout out to Booksmart, because everybody should freaking see Booksmart,
because
it is a brilliant movie. Anyway, what about you guys?
Okay, I guess I would have to give a non-horror shout out to Alita Battle Angel.
Ah, of course.
Yeah.
Like, we should have known that was going to be his response.
I mean, how could it not be? I saw it like 7 times.
Wow.
Why even ask that question?
Look, I waited for that movie for 15 years. I was pretty stoked about it. It came out really well. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. And the Blu-ray's coming out soon, so I'm pretty stoked about that.
All right, Korea, putting you on the spot.
Yeah.
All right. You know what? Shout out to Detective Pikachu.
Nice.
That was just a fun time.
Yeah.
Had a few emotional moments, but like ultimately, like, it was just cool to see, you know, Pokemon in real life fighting on giant balloons and stuff. Like, that was fun. Also, does anyone remember that the movie The Silence came out this year on Netflix?
I don't even know what The Silence is.
It was that bat movie with the girl from Sabrina and Stanley Tucci.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
It was basically trying to be, what was it?
A
Quiet Place.
Oh, wait. I remember
okay.
now.
The other one, but with
bats. So wait, they did one after Bird Box that was trying to be a Quiet
Place. Yeah, it was basically trying to be a Quiet Place and Bird Box at the same time, but also with giant bats.
I was probably too busy watching The Dirt when that came out.
Yeah.
That's not a thing you should admit.
All right, let's get out of here. Speaking of The Dirt, our music, Our theme song is Restless Spirit. Hey, guess what, you guys? Restless Spirit dropped a new album.
Oh.
And it's awesome.
Nice.
I think it's called Lord of the New Depression. And it you can get it basically, I mean, you can stream it on Spotify, or if you really want, you can go to their Facebook and they'll sell you a CD of it. And there actually is a new recording of our theme song on it too. The song's called Young Graves. And so they're getting as much mileage out of that song as we are. So go rock with Restless Spirit. Our artwork is Chris Fisher, which we were threatening to have him do a new one for the second season, but now we're six episodes in. So maybe for the third, we'll hit him up again. But go hire him because he does great work. Where can we find you guys on the Twitters, Jacob?
You can find me at Jacob Davison _. That is at @JacobDavison _.
And you, Korea?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Korean Barbecue. That's CorreanBBQ. Although you'll mostly just see me on Twitter bitching at Loot Crate, or on Instagram building a shelf out of VHS tape. So I don't know how interesting it is.
I've been following your Loot Crate saga because I went through the same thing with frickin' Horror Block. And Box of Dread. Box of Dread did the same thing to me, too. Those damn subscription boxes are all the same.
They finally got me two out of my three boxes, but nice. My May Loot Fright, like the one I actually care about, is it's a May box, and they're now saying it's not going to get here till mid-August. So that's just ridiculous. That's like a weird track record. But anyways, fuck that shit. Don't forget to follow us on iHorror.com, Facebook, Ion Horror. We're going to be doing some more contests and posting some other musings. I hear there's rumblings of a signed Rampage Blu-ray that we once we figure out the logistics of getting the three of us to sign it, we're gonna be not auctioning off, but we'll be sending out to a fan, maybe. Right. Let's get that going.
Hey, if we say it on the podcast, then we have to do it.
I guess.
Yeah, that's more the reason why I brought it up, because we've been talking about that for a while now. So,
all right. And me, you can find on Twitter at Cinema Fierite. That's like Verite, but with fear. So it's F-E-A-R-I-T-E. And again, you can find all three of us at the Ion Horror Facebook page. So you can come and ask us why we're so crazy and we forgot whatever your favorite movie from the first half of 2019 is. And we'll be back in a couple weeks with a topic that isn't rehashing stuff we've talked about in the last 6 months. So for me, James J. Edwards.
I'm Jacob Davison.
And I'm Jonathan Korea.
Keep your eye on horror.